Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. I'm getting excited. I'm headed down to Florida not long after the show. We're going to go to Pensacola for Christmas, and then we're headed to Key West for New Year's.
The Deep South.
Yeah, but that's not all I'm excited about. When I get back, it's my understanding we're going to have no less than a half a dozen brand new shows launching across the three studios. And we got news yesterday. The one I'm really excited about is this healthcare consumerism today.
Yes.
Is we're going to launch that like the second week of January,
yeah,
right?
We're working on the guests right now.
So, yeah, we're getting busy. It's great to have your wife in the studio with us.
That's right. That's a treat.
We don't invite my wife. I told my wife that I have a real job. So she doesn't even know about this.
You don't want to let her know that this is what the job is.
Right.
But we have a great show today, and we have one of my favorite people, Mr. Bob Littell here. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, I'm doing great, Lee. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. You're all in holiday swing. You got family, friends?
Yeah, I am,
lined up?
But I've already put on my net weaving antenna and stone. I've got some suggestions for you, some really good people in healthcare.
Oh, terrific.
And so, Bob, what you mentioned net weaving. You're the father of net weaving, at least here in Atlanta, right?
Yeah,
emperor,
father,
guru,
or whatever. Yeah, guru. Yeah, keep going.
So, why don't you share a little bit for the two people out there who don't know what net weaving is?
Well, the easiest way to say is that net weaving actually just reverses the traditional mindset of networking, which tends to be more focused on can you help me, or your prospect for me, or do you have something I need? And
Right. Very
quick to point out that there's nothing in net weaving that's an attack on networking. To be successful, especially in business, you have to do both. But we've proven over time that your net weaving activities and what you do, either as a connector of other people, either as a gratuitous resource for others, no strings attached, or building your own trusted resource network across all industries made up of people who are exceptional at what they do, the results in the long term and often in the short term will be far greater than your more self-serving networking activities.
And networking has the word work in it, and no one likes that,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Weaving is just so creative.
Right.
That's just good, solid marketing
elegant.
Science, right?
It's elegant.
So what compelled you to develop this process and get out there and start helping people adopt it?
Well, actually, it started at the dinner table, where my goal was to keep my brilliant father, who was the first chairman of NASA's Inventions Board, and my sister, who was the other brain, who just retired as a technical writer for MIT, to keep from getting into these knockdown, drag-out philosophical arguments, and I'm trying to keep my mother from leaving the dinner table in tears. So there's always been this kind of piece of me that's trying to connect people and trying to help people talk with each other, and it kind of led to this concept that was the precursor of net weaving called do-a-favor marketing. And I still remember the first big talk I ever gave was to a group of Asian insurance agents in Shanghai at the Portman Ritz-Carlton. And it
you
was
should always start with an
really
easy
amazing.
Group.
Yeah.
Nice.
But then it one day I was brainstorming with a good friend, and the word net weaving popped out, and I said, "Boy, I'm trademarking that sucker."
You got
and that was over 10 years ago.
So yeah. How do you describe the distinction between networking and net weaving when someone asks you at a cocktail party?
Well, the one-liner is net weaving is a golden rule, meaning do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but you do it first. But it's also a pay-it-forward form of networking, because the whole idea being you host meetings to introduce two people to each other. That's the action step. And you can either do it virtually, you can do it by a three-way phone call, or more powerfully, you can do it actually in person. But you give a little overview of what the concept's all about, and then you basically introduce the two people, and they now get it, that it's all about us finding ways to help each other and discovering people who we know in common we never would have known if you hadn't put us together. And in most cases, they turn the table on you at the end of the meeting and say, "Gosh, Stone, this has been great, but isn't there something we can do to help you?" And you just turn the table on them and say, "Well, why don't you just do the same thing I've done, pay it forward, and host a meeting for two others?" And that's how I ended up meeting Catherine Ryan Hyde, the author of Pay It Forward, the book that became the movie. And last year I was just, I'm now the outgoing first president of the Pay It Forward Foundation. And with her permission, net weaving globally now is the business version of Pay It Forward.
So now Pay It Forward was more of, that was the movie about a kid who did something nice to somebody and then took off?
Kevin Spacey, Helen Hunt, Haley Joel Osment, it's become kind of a like a Home Alone movie that's become a classic that you constantly see being played over and over again. Very sad ending, but it was needed. Kevin Spacey plays a seventh grade school teacher, and every year he gives his class the same assignment. Do you have this one in the seventh grade? Create something to change the world and then put it into action.
I was out that day.
And so one day, Trevor, the seventh grader, goes up to the board and he says, well, here's my idea. And he draws a circle. And then he says, when somebody does a favor for you, instead of paying them back, you have to pay it forward. And then he draws three other circles and connects them. And then they have to do favors for three others and so on. And the book and the movie are really a look back through a reporter's eyes who documents all this and shows how the world ends up getting changed by this simple little concept. And so net weaving, if you imagine, you host a meeting to introduce two people, and then they in turn host a meeting to introduce two other people. It's not three for one the way the movie was, but it's still exponential in the way if everybody fulfills their promise to pay it forward.
Now, in your business now, a lot of it, it revolves around net weaving, but at one point your main business was something else, right?
Yeah, I actually had been marketing vice president of a couple insurance companies, and they kept getting bought, the last one by GE, and moved to Richmond, and my wife and I had fallen in love with Atlanta, so we formed a brokerage insurance agency where we weren't selling to the public but selling to brokers, insurance brokers, and I had my 15 minutes of fame with a front page Wall Street Journal investment section on a company I created called Second Opinion Insurance Services, one of those caricature drawings and all. Wow.
Oh, wow,
it was
that's
neat.
Big time.
And it was all about, I discovered that I had some unique talents to look over the shoulder of what an agent was recommending on a very, very large case, usually hired and retained by an attorney or a CPA. And I would basically judge the agent, the company, the underwriting assessment. And I'm still the only person in the history of the insurance industry that developed enough trust with the underwriting community that I'm a contributing editor of the medical journal. So I still do that every so often and write articles.
Now, when you were implementing some of these net weaving strategies in the insurance world, were people like, oh, this is what we've been looking for. Finally, now we have this kind of way that we can kind of get more business, or did people embrace it, or was it kind of...
Boy, I'm going to tick off some insurance agents right about now.
We do that every morning.
Well, interestingly enough, and I'm also the editor of a magazine called, newsletter called Probe that doesn't mind biting the hand that feeds it, so I don't mind this. The insurance industry has, in my opinion, played a good game of it's all about relationships, but really it's only been both ends of the spectrum that have really adopted it. I spoke a few years ago as one of the keynotes for the Top of the Table, and those are the members of the $1 Million Roundtable who are usually all making $1 million or more, and they get it. They understand it's all about relationships, both with their clients as well as with their strategic advisors. The other end are the real professional academics, and that's the Society of Financial Service Professionals, where I've spoken. But too many companies talk a good story about relationships, but the next thing you know, it's how many calls did you make today? How many cold calls did you make today? How many doors got slammed in your face? And so they've still got a ways to go. And I really say it's one reason why the insurance industry isn't, 80% of all new agent recruiting is only being done by 10 companies. And most of them are. Yeah, it's a shrinking industry right now. They've got to turn things around. So I'll just keep telling them until they listen.
So you tell them you have all this experience and all these kind of case studies of the success of this strategy, and yet still it isn't being adopted more universally?
Well, here's the problem. Agents, the older agents like myself, are selling people our own age, and we're selling larger policies. Well, they're issuing fewer policies. So profitability right now over the next maybe 5, maybe 10 years will probably be some of the best they've had. But then all of a sudden there's going to be this vacuum. So I think there's a few CEOs that are going to say, that are saying, not on my watch, because putting the money back into rebuilding that that recruiting machine is going to be very, very expensive.
But, oh yeah, that's going to hurt.
Yeah. Now, but if you were, if you had a company that had a sales staff, would you recommend? Obviously, you'd recommend net weaving rather than this cold call strategy of going to market.
Absolutely.
Right?
But it in many cases it takes hiring a different kind of a person, and it takes training in a totally different way as well. And in some cases, it is going to take longer to train than the typical.
You don't think net weaving is just an innate skill? Like, it's something that has to be learned? It's not something that people just possess?
Well, actually, you know, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal about a month ago that actually said they've identified a hormone in children that that shows whether or not they share their toys or hoard their toys. And I think I used to say that there is a giver's gene, that it is to a certain extent genetic, and now I've got the proof.
There you go.
Well, I tell you, Lee, you know, in our operation here, I think we probably do a very clumsy job of it, and we could get a lot better about being intentional about it. But occasionally we'll sit down, we'll get strategic, and we will put certain people in this room, and we will give them an opportunity to articulate what they do, and we give them a chance to meet each other. So maybe just serendipitously, we're doing a little net weaving on our own, and we could probably benefit from some real training around it.
So do you do training around this?
Well, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years, I've really had, I can't tell you the number of people who've either heard me speak, read one of the 3 books that I've written, and said, gee, when are you going to get around to creating a training course where not only we can get better at learning the skill sets, but, you know, I'm a consultant, or I'm a speaker, I'm a writer, I'm a whatever. And I'd love to basically do what you do and train and actually make it part of my revenue stream. So here it is 6 years later, and finally this January I'll be launching at several colleges a net weaving ambassador certificate program. And then eventually, when I build up enough people who've gone through the basic program, then we'll do a facilitator's manual and actually license and certify people to be able to train and teach it.
So what colleges are offering this right now?
I'm talking right now. I'm pretty sure that Georgia State has created or is creating a new certification program for the Institute of Management Consultants. And Dan Stotts, who heads that, he and I have been talking about making one full day of that certificate program. And I've already taught 2 different programs to IMC, so I think that's pretty close. Clayton State has also indicated that they want me to teach up north at Rome, where I've done the book clubs, and also on their regular campus. And then I've done several programs, believe it or not. I can't remember how it came about for Michigan State and Lansing Community College. So.
You couldn't get into Colorado? You don't have any connections there?
You know what? I probably ought to go back. I don't know, though. I'm not sure they'd remember.
Well, you are a busy guy. You mentioned briefly book clubs. So I understand you've got a little bit of a unique twist on how to execute a book club. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Well, you know, I'm real active at the Buckhead Club here in Atlanta, and I was kind of discouraged that we would usually not get very large turnouts, and it's a simple explanation. If you're a busy business person and you'd love to read the book, but you don't have time to do it, you don't feel like you can really get involved in the discussion. So I decided I had all these great business books, and I was just as guilty as everybody else. So I created the Don't Need to Read the Book Club.
I like it.
And I would call the author. First one I ever did was Daniel Pink, A Whole New Mind, Get Permission. And then I'd write a 10 to 15, the longest one I wrote was 30 pages. And then everyone who RSVPs, and they have to swear they are coming, because it takes me about 20 hours to write one of the summaries. Mm. But I do it. One of the reasons I've gotten the authors to go along with it, I don't summarize the whole book, and I actually put teasers in there with page references. So it would draw you into the book and make you want to own it as well. And the latest one I did, though, I'm really, really proud of this one, because he's a friend, Lee Ellis, Colonel retired Lee Ellis, U.S. Air Force, who wrote this wonderful book that won't be out until May in bookstores. It's available on his website, leadershipfreedom.com. But Lee was captured in 1967 over North Vietnam as a pilot, and he and his commander then spent the next 5 years in various POW camps. But what's so fascinating about the book is that every chapter starts out with a theme, but also a story of what happened in one of the camps. But then it morphs into a leadership lesson that can and should be applied today. And I have to tell you, the summary is going all around the country, my summary and Lee's book, and Lee is getting absolutely swamped with invitations to speak as well. And maybe I could somehow twist his arm to come in here.
You think? Is he here in Atlanta?
Phenomenal.
Oh, that'd be great. We'll set that up.
I actually met him through David Ratcliffe when he was the CEO of Georgia Power, and he'd used Lee as a consultant and as an executive coach.
And when is the event? Have you done that?
Oh, we did. Yeah, we did. And that just happened. And Lee actually came and gave some observations as well. And it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Now, what's your next one? Have you picked the book?
Actually, I'm going to do something different in January. I'm actually sending out to the group of people who have come 3 different books, and I'm still kind of rattling around over which ones, and we're going to take a vote on which ones. So I think I'll be a little more democratic in 2012.
What are the? Have you picked the 3 books?
No, I haven't. I've probably got a list of about 10, and don't ask them right now, that I'm trying to narrow down to 3. But they're all phenomenal books that really other people have told me about.
I'm sure one of them's got to be Lee Cantor's book. Right?
What about yours? Is coming
oh
out.
Oh my gosh!
Stone has a book. What is it?
Well, I was too lazy to write another one, so I'm just doing a second revised edition of one that I wrote 10 years
ago.
Tell
him the name. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, that paper rolls. It'll let you. It'll lay there and let you write down anything you want to on it. Name of the book is Never Fry Bacon in the Nude and Other Lessons from the Quick and the Dead. I had a good time writing it.
I think I'd probably have standing room only at that. I don't know what they'd be wearing, but
we know what they'd be eating.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell us about this book that you came in with under your arm.
Oh, gosh.
That's
this has got to be one of the greatest net weaving stories. I'm getting ready to go speak in Dallas, Texas, and a friend who was worked for me when I was marketing vice president is now CEO of a company there, and I had an open evening, and I said, gee, Dick, why don't we have dinner? And he said, oh, gosh, I've been invited to a very high-level a reception at SMU where they're announcing SMU had been chosen as a national leadership training program for Hispanics. And the National Hispanic Corporate Council was there. All the big companies were there. And we came in, met Pat Martinez, the executive director, and told her a little bit about net weaving. She drags me over, introduces me to this lady, Yolanda Casey, who's head of digital printing for Hallmark Cards. We have a nice conversation, exchange some emails, and towards Christmas, I happened to be looking at TV and see this ad for Hallmark recordable children's books. Well, I think in a previous time that I was interviewed here, I told a story about how I adopted about 6 years ago an all-African-American school in South Atlanta, where every year I go teach net weaving and pay it forward to third graders as a socialization skill. I just got through doing that about a couple of weeks ago, doing this year's. And probably 20 to 30 of our kids there are being raised by a grandparent. And so my idea was, gosh, I wonder if I could call this lady up and see if they donate a couple of dozen of these books. So I call her up. She connects me with the head of the foundation, and I write this impassioned email. I got to tell you, Stone and Lee, I had a handkerchief out. and I get a one line, I'm sorry, your project doesn't qualify.
Ouch.
And so, luckily, I'd copied this Yolanda Casey, the woman I met, and at least she must have told this lady, at least call him and tell him why it didn't qualify. She said, well, your project isn't big enough. We only do big projects. I said, well, I'm on the board of Atlanta Partners for Education. That's all Atlanta Public Schools. How big does it need to be? She says, how about a truckload? So Bill Bowling at the food bank agreed to store all the books. And then over the last couple of months, we've been distributing to everything from Safe House Outreach, Hosea Feed the Hungry. And then we got this, and I'm using them, of course, at Whiteford Elementary, but also we got this idea, how about the other end? And so we delivered a pallet to cure children's cancer. Hopefully this will be a celebration this year that the kids are alive. And that will be a permanent legacy forever. So
about how
neat.
Many books?
7,800 books
wow.
were distributed, yeah.
Yeah, you are doing some terrific work, man. You must sleep really well at night.
No. I have a hard time. It's the ideas are popping out. I mean, I'm lucky if I sleep 3 hours without a pad beside me and a pen with another. With another idea or another way to tweak one of the ones we're doing.
Well, we joked about it a little bit a little while ago, but all kidding aside, I think it would make for good radio to have some of these authors to come through from time to time, particularly those that are in town. Have them come in the studio, give them a chance to talk about that, maybe have you share your summary. And I think that would make for some good shows.
Yeah, there's another great one here, John Patterson, who's one of the experts in the country on customer service. And he wrote a book. He and his co-author, Chip Bell, wrote a book called Take Their Breath Away. And it's all about providing over-the-top customer service and how you do it. He'd be another great one.
Now, would you be up? We I don't know if you know this, but we do remote broadcasts. And we have the radio studio where we take it on location at different trade shows, conferences, symposiums. Would you be up for us showing up at one of these book clubs and we'll interview some of the attendees, maybe an author that's there, and we'll do it just
absolutely.
Live right from the...
That's a cool idea.
Absolutely. Drive me anywhere and I'll...
You don't even have to... We'll show up there. We'll bring it to you.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, I'm game.
Yeah, I think that if we can, I mean, I'm sure you don't need help getting a lot of people to show up there, but we'd like to do our part.
But no, it would be fun to interview the people that are attending. Why did you come? What did you get out of it?
Yeah.
We could interview the author. That
would
be
great.
Fun.
Yeah. Right,
let's do that.
No, do it.
Cool. So what is the, if people want to learn more about NetWeaving or what you're up to, is there a website?
Yeah, there's two websites, actually. One is netweaving.com. That's easy. But the other one is this will be our third year of doing NetWeaving Pay It Forward Week, where our goal is to fill up restaurants, hotels, business clubs, bars, all over the metro Atlanta area with NetWeaving hosting meetings, where someone is hosting a meeting to introduce two people to each other, and then asking each of them to pay it forward and do the same thing for two others. And the whole idea is that will, if everyone fulfills their promise, that's going to create an economic ripple effect, not only for the restaurants, but for businesses that are created, collaborative connections that are made. And the website for that, which is not updated yet for next year, but it's netweaving-pif, as in payitforward-week.com. And I would also encourage all your listeners to go to either website and go take the NetWeavers Aptitude Assessment Quiz.
See if we have that gene.
To find if you have that gene, and you will get a total score that will either make you a natural NetWeaver, been doing it all your life, just never had a word for it, a NetWeaver in the wings, a NetWeaver's apprentice, meaning you see quite a few things you need to improve on, and then I struggled with what do I call that bottom category, a self-serving individual who cares only about them. So I called it a net-weaving skeptic. The world just doesn't work that way. Nobody does anything without any anticipation.
Does anybody ever get that score? Have you ever seen that score show up on that?
No, I haven't, but I don't want to know them.
But we'd like to think, and I really do genuinely believe, that human beings, for the most part, are wired to behave in this fashion, aren't they?
They are, yep. Well, actually, interesting you should say that, because a guy one time moved here from Intel in California, and he said, you know what, if you wanted me to mathematically prove why net weaving will always outperform networking, I said, well, instead of a formula, could you kind of give me an example? He says, look at nature. He said, in nature, if you were looking at it real quickly, you would think survival of the fittest is the way to go. But if you look at it in evolutionary terms, what is it? It's the symbiotic relationships that are passed on.
Uh-huh.
And so even where there's a host and a parasite, they both are helping each other, understanding that both are going to benefit.
Hey, before we let him go, we got to give him props. I don't even know if you're aware of this, but the Junior Achievement Show that we have, it's one of our most popular. The kids do a fantastic job of interviewing. They go out, they invite the execs, they interview them, they follow up behind that and share the content and share it with their community, and the execs share the interviews with their community. It's been a wildly successful program. It all started because of your generosity in inviting us, and I got to attend a NetWeaving function, and I just want to publicly thank you for that and openly and publicly declare this NetWeaving thing, this is the real deal, and it is genuinely, it's very powerful, and it's had a real impact on us and what we're trying to accomplish here.
Well, if we could get this thing launched at colleges around the country, and especially because the kids are coming out too much texting and without the personal skills, relationship building, eyeball to eyeball, then we can do something that can really, really have an impact and a ripple effect that can go on forever, for years to come.
Yep, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being here, Bob.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, you going to hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
I always learn something.
All right. So next up, we have Miss Chris Kavanaugh. How you doing, Chris?
Doing good.
Now, that's a tough act to follow, but we'd love to hear what you guys have got going on in your world.
Sure. Well, I'm here mostly today to talk a little bit about my business. But in the big scheme of things, I'm one of Rico Pena's guests for his Stay in the Game event on January 14th.
Right. But what is your role with that event?
Oh, I'm one of the speakers. I'll be one of the speakers that day.
So what are you going to talk about?
My topic is balance is a myth. And I'm a big believer that there is no way to balance your life. It's impossible. And so it's all about that. With the concept that if you run your life from a priority mindset, using my brand about being CEO of your entire life, you're going to be able to manage it more effectively, and you don't have to balance then, and it gets easier to handle.
I like that concept.
You like
being
that?
CEO of your entire life. It's, I can tell you I haven't attained it, but I like the idea.
So how did you get into this world? What's your background?
I had a number of different positions in my career. I'm 43 years old. But in 2006, I quit my last job and decided to go on a career quest to figure out really what it was that I wanted to be happy with and passionate about. At 36 years old, I knew I was too old to be earning a paycheck, and I really needed to love what I did. And so through the course of that career quest, I really found out that all of my skill sets and abilities all drilled down to people development. And that was the part of the job that I had always loved at every one of my positions. And so I ended up choosing to be a coach. I'm an executive and life coach, trainer, and author and speaker. And now every day I get to get up and make a difference. And I absolutely love what I do. And for the last couple of years, they've been the absolute, you know, difficult in terms of being an entrepreneur, but the absolute best years I've ever had of my entire career.
So Stuck to CEO is the title of your book.
Correct.
Speak to that a little bit, if you will. What compelled you to write it, and what's the core message that you're trying to get across? What are some things that our previous guest might include in his summary, if he ever were to do a summary on it?
Well, the whole concept is, what I have found in my entire life is that most people are very reactive. They're not proactive. And when you are reactive naturally rather than proactive, life happens to you instead of you making life happen. And you have to be able to shift that. And that's one of the reasons I call my company Shift, is because I'm helping people shift their thoughts, actions, and beliefs from where they are now to where they want to be. And the CEO of your life concept is, if you would look at the most successful CEOs in the world, the reason that they're hired is because they've got skill sets they bring to the table that those companies know are going to be skill sets that will help those companies stay successful and continue to grow and become the best they can be. And the skill sets are things like, you know, really, really great abilities to make choices about their time, really great ability to cope with stress, team building, communication, being a visionary, being driven, being committed, having a great support network. And if people would run their lives like CEOs run companies, they would be amazed at how incredibly effective and incredibly fulfilling their lives would be, because every day they would have to be proactive rather than reactive. Every day they would have to step out and do something to take charge of their life and control it and make it what they want to be, instead of sitting back hoping and wishing that things would be different. And so that's the concept, is get up and be CEO of your entire life. Your relationships would be better, your health would be better, your career would be better, you know, your friends might be better, all kinds of things.
What is a baby step that you help people get this process started? Because that might, it might seem overwhelming to make those kind of, that's kind of a shift, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Well, when people hire me as a coach, I normally walk them through a 5-step shift process. I start by having them fill out my C-suite assessment, which is just an assessment that I created to kind of get people a feel for where they are in the 5 shifts. And the first shift is always to connect to the possibilities. It's the shifting of your perception. Because until you get to a point where you actually think and clarify what you want and believe it's possible, nothing is going to change. Because if you don't believe it's possible, no matter how hard you try to move forward to get what you want, you're never going to be able to get there. At least it's going to take you a long time.
So do people really not think it's possible?
You'd be amazed at the things that people wish could happen, but they don't truly believe it will. And because they don't believe it will, it doesn't.
So, like, they say that it might, but do you think they really
don't
believe
it? They're not really believing it. But in this country, too, so much really can happen. It's almost like a kid in a candy store get overwhelmed. Do you find that maybe people that are very talented and have a lot going for them, but there's so much to choose from what they want out of life, that they're confused and can't land on something?
Well, that's the struggle with overwhelm or, you know, with too many choices and the lack of priorities, which is another part of the shift, is setting priorities and focusing on what it is that you want instead of trying to do it all.
So you have to kind of pare down. And that must be hard too, right? Because people think that if they're paring down, they're leaving things on the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the other things I've really found in working with people is that they find it difficult to actually say, I'm important. This is going to be about me now. You know, a lot of women specifically, but people in general, when you ask them to invest in themselves, it's hard for them to do so because they're thinking about, well, if I spend money on me, then I'm not spending money on my kids, or I'm not spending money on this bill. But if they don't invest in themselves, they're never, ever going to be as good as they could be. So really, being somewhat selfish in a way is so important as to be able to get what you want out of life.
So I can get my arms wrapped around the idea of speaking to someone one-on-one or maybe a couple or a family, but what is it like to stand up on the platform and speak to hundreds of people and try to share this message? I would think it would be very exhilarating when it went well, but man, that's got to be intimidating.
You know, I think some people, like myself, I've always been comfortable on stage. I've been speaking on stage since I think I was 17.
Oh, wow.
When I was in high school, I had an opportunity to do some work where I was in charge of some stuff and I had to speak in front of the school. And it's just, for me, it's natural. So I have no issues and problems. As long as I'm prepared with what I want to say, or at least have a good idea of what I want to say. You know, the really interesting thing about speaking on stage is no one knows what you're going to say. So chances are they don't even know when you mess up when you do.
And that's a good point.
And that's why I'm very, very comfortable stepping on a stage, because pretty much no one knows when I've messed up. Except
so
me.
How do you get them to hire you, though? So you want to speak in front of a big group. How do you market and sell what you do? Because yours strikes me as a very competitive, very crowded arena. Is that accurate?
It could be crowded, but in truth, I think all speakers in general, and Bob would probably agree, that we may all speak around the same topic, but we're all very unique in personality, and we're all very unique in how we present it. And so the audience may like, you know, my specific slant, and so they may choose me over somebody else, or, you know, they may choose somebody else. And it doesn't matter who they choose. The message is important. So if a company or an individual or a group wants their people to be able to grow and learn and grow, then just choose somebody. You know, that's just the big thing, is just make the investment in your people, in yourself.
Now, it's the end of the year. A lot of people do kind of New Year's resolutions and kind of recap their year. Do you have any tips or anything?
I ordered a small fry yesterday in honor of getting ready for New Year's resolution.
Small fries? Right. That's big. That's good. Baby steps. So do you have any tips for people that are kind of recapping their year and looking forward to next year?
I think the first tip that I would give them is to acknowledge that every day is a new beginning. You don't have to wait until January. Just be different. Just start different. January is the natural shift for people, right? Because it is the beginning of the year. But every day can be different. One of the things I talk about when I coach people and when I speak is that a reminder that failure is actually part of the process. So when you are striving to be different, to achieve a goal, expect failure to show up. Don't be surprised. Most people, when failure shows up, they fall down, they curl up in a ball, and they go, oh, I guess I shouldn't have done that. Instead of going, okay, you know, I'm trying to be different. I'm not supposed to be perfect the first time out. Let me get up and try it again. So I think failure a lot of times becomes an immediate obstacle, and it shouldn't be. It should just be part of the process. So as you're crafting goals for the new year, as you're making decisions, clearly write them down in a tangible way so you know what it looks like when you achieve them. You know, don't say, I want to lose weight, because that means nothing. Instead, say, I want to achieve X weight goal, and this is what I'm going to be doing to getting there. And if you fail along the way, so be it. You fail along the way. Just get up and do it again and do it again until you get it right.
Now, tell us a little bit about this shift interview series. Who were you talking to? What kind of questions were you asking? And then what are you doing with the content? How are you getting that information out to people?
Earlier this year, I called up a bunch of different people that I knew of or knew that I really felt had gone through shifts in their own life and in their career. And there is a specific type of individual that weathers a shift well. They make good choices, and even if failure is part of the journey, they manage to get through it. And so what I did was I interviewed seven different people about the different shifts in their lives, and we just talked about what it was that they went through, what choices they made, why they made them, what happened. And it ended up just being really, really great interviews. And so I recorded them all, put them on a web page, and now when people sign up for my e-zine, they get the interviews at no charge, just as a way to kind of introduce myself and the concepts of shifts.
Cool. Now, early on we mentioned Rico Pena's seminar coming up. Can you talk a little bit about that and what the date and when you're going to speak there?
Sure. It's January 14th. It's a Saturday. It's an all-day event. It's at the former W Hotel, which I think is now the Atlanta Perimeter Suites.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. It's Perimeter Center West, basically on the backside of Perimeter Mall, across from the Seasons 52 restaurant. It's really all just an all-day event full of just great, great speakers with all kinds of different topics. And it's an opportunity for a business owner or even just a woman who wants motivation and information to step in and kind of be in the environment where everyone there is committed to staying in the game, to working through the challenges to be able to achieve whatever it is that they're trying to achieve personally and professionally.
Good stuff. And then do you know a website for that?
stayinthegame.com, I believe, is the website.
Do you know stuff?
I don't offhand, but we'll make sure that we get it right. And when we
it may
post
be stayinthegamesummit.com.
Okay. Well, we'll post that that URL when we post this on the website. So we'll make sure to.
And do you have a website?
I do. It's www.begintoshift.com. And the book website, if anybody's interested in learning more about becoming CEO of your entire life, is stucktoceo.com.
Is it the number two or the word?
The word two, T-O.
And in the spirit of today's theme, we make a personal commitment, Lee and I both, that we will get this out to our two listeners and pay it forward.
That's right. Two at a time. All right. Well, this wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We thank our guests, and I thank my host, Stone, and wishing everybody a happy new year, and we will see you all next year.